This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. There are many, many more individuals here in Northwest Indiana who have been affected by the policies of the Trump administration as far as immigration issues are concerned. Let's find out if there's any change now with the change of a new administration. Alfredo Estrada is an immigration attorney who works for the Burke, Costanza, and Carberry law firm here in Northwest Indiana. And Alfredo, thank you for joining us on the program today. If you will, please bring us up to date on the immigration issue, at least put it maybe a bit more context locally as well as nationally. What are the changes we see as yet, although the ones proposed at least from the Biden administration?
Thanks for having me, Chris. I really appreciate it. It's been a while. And as you know, immigration law changes sometimes daily, sometimes weekly, especially the last 4 years. Since the Biden administration took office, over a half year, a month and a half ago, you know, we haven't seen much of substantive changes outside of, maybe a change at the southern border regarding asylum seekers.
Right.
And reaffirming his commitment to DACA. Nothing new on DACA. That was established by a court order. Just prior to him taking office, but he did sign an executive order stating that the administration's reaffirming their commitment to it, but it hasn't changed any of the requirements regarding the 2012 policy.
Are we finding that, at least so far, some of the executive orders, and we know that some have already been challenged by the courts, at least in Texas, are they likely to hold? Are we likely to see more coming about now?
Well, that's a good question, because what the Democrats did and organizations did under the Trump administration was detail a roadmap of how to challenge executive orders, especially regarding immigration reform. You know, the Trump administration had an aggressive platform through executive orders on immigration. And what in response was from organizations and the Democrats was to sue in court. And we got some good case law during that time, or what we thought was good case law on the executive power in solely implementing immigration law, what they detailed was the roadmap on how to challenge it. So the Biden administration has to be very careful to adhere to those court orders and the roadmap that the judges and courts have set out as to the power, sole power of the executive. In dealing with, you know, the Administrative Procedure Act, properly adopting rules and regulations, and the extent of that power. And what it highlights is something that's been highlighted since really 1997 or 2001, when we had the last comprehensive immigration reform, and is that Congress is absent in the field of immigration. It's been, you know, derelict in their duty to find a resolution to a crisis in this country regarding immigration reform, and has just ignored, at least in an official capacity, in addressing an issue that affects so many venues, whether it's the labor force, whether it's national security, whether it's how communities can redevelop with an influx of new communities coming into their borders. You know, it's something that needs to be recognized and talked about. And that's a conversation that needs to delve a lot deeper than just a DREAM Act.
We're talking with immigration attorney Alfredo Estrada about some of the national and local issues involving immigration here in Northwest Indiana. And are you seeing, at least now, things have calmed down a bit since the change of administrations as far as the move by ICE to move more people out of the Midwest and get them headed to south to deportation?
Yeah. So what I mean, locally what we're seeing, I think nationally as well, I do practice in removal defense of deportations. And to be honest, it's been calmed down quite a bit. The courts couldn't meet as much as they used to due to COVID. So the deportation of individuals have dropped through that proceeding due to COVID, and immigrants who have had defenses for asylum just haven't had their court day in court. you know, there's that 100-day moratorium, which for deportations, which was challenged, and then, you know, the Biden administration kind of went ahead prior to the 100-day to issue new immigration reform or rules and regs regarding that. What we're seeing is, you know, at least in my practice, is an uptick of individuals who are saying, okay, let's now address my immigration status. How do we do that? But the laws haven't changed substantively. And when you look at Biden's administration's, the Biden administration's bill on immigration, there's some really good things. It's a wish list for immigrants, I would say, and those who want to keep U.S. citizen families together. It's going to absolutely substantively address the needs of the nation's immigration issues.
Are you finding that the clients that you have and their family members feel a little more confident in being able to stay in the states as the change of administrations come about? Are they going to have to fight even harder?
Well, it's going to be the same fight as before. You know, we can hope and wish for change with a comprehensive immigration reform that he's the U.S. Citizenship Act that he's proposed to come into fruition. But unfortunately, as an attorney, I live in reality. Mm-hmm. And the reality is the law hasn't changed. So what I tell individuals who come into my office looking for relief is that the laws haven't changed, so we're going to operate as the laws are now. And if they do change, we could quickly move to adjust our stance and our applications to whatever the law changes to. But it definitely, there's a feeling within the communities and the people I see is that, you know, now that there's a new administration who seems to be supportive of people coming out and adjusting status or addressing immigration status, there's been a rush to do that.
Well, Alfredo, thank you very much for the update, and we are all keeping a very close eye, certainly, on what happens in the Biden administration on immigration issues, and I guess we'll just have to wait and see if that gets translated into any action as far as what ICE is doing here in the Midwest, and in particular in Northwest Indiana. Thank you for your time and giving us an idea of some of the thoughts that you have and some of the people that you talk to about the immigration issue.
Well, thanks for having me, Chris.
Immigration attorney Alfredo Estrada here in Northwest Indiana. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. And in this next story, we bring you something a little different. It's been a year since the COVID crisis started to dominate our lives. And to mark that milestone, throughout March, we will reflect on the stories told, revisit some of the people spoken to, and ask you about your own experiences. We call the series Reflections, starting out with a non-narrated collection of key moments reported in central Indiana and across the Midwest. It was curated and produced by Side Effects Public Media's Carter Barrett.
Breaking news tonight is the coronavirus now spreading in the U.S., the first case in the country of unknown origin, no known.
If I have friends who, you know, who text me and ask and said, oh, are you worried? Am I worried? I think that the greater concern here is for people to overreact, right? So I've seen posts online about stores running out of paper towels and toilet paper and limiting how much water you can buy. Preparedness is always helpful, but that might be an overreaction in this case.
So at this time, we know not only in Indiana, but across the U.S., we are seeing community spread.
The 2020 Summer Olympics, now the latest major sports cancellation caused by the global COVID-19 pandemic.
The first leg of the horse racing's Triple Crown, the Kentucky Derby, was moved earlier today to September as well.
So within the last hour or so, we have had the ACC, the Big 12, SEC, Big 10, and AAC all announce that they would be canceling their conference tournaments.
You know, every day I see these patients come in, I see them at the bedside, and you do the job. You swallow your fear, you swallow your anxiety, you gown up, and you go in and do the job.
So you can only imagine what that must feel like, you know, sticking your mask in this little brown paper bag and putting your name on it for the next day and hoping that is going to protect you.
I mean, I'm not at the front line, so I can't even begin to imagine what that must be like every day.
Right now, in the parking lot behind me out the window, there is, I think, about 10 cars full of family members of an elder gentleman who's in the hospital and actively dying. But the whole family slept in their cars in the parking lot overnight because they were afraid he was going to pass away, and they wanted to be here, even if here is in the parking lot.
I've been with the Marion County Coroner's Office for 22 and a half years. This pandemic has been like nothing I've ever experienced in my entire career.
This is a call from an inmate at the Indiana Department of Corrections.
At this very moment, I can reach out and touch somebody, and now somebody else. The breeding ground for infections and viruses, and now we got a reason to be scared for our lives.
Bueno, yo la verdad me sorprendí cuando decían, porque yo no conocía a nadie con COVID. Yo pensaba que era, bueno, que era, no sé, algo que no existía.
He says before arriving here in June, he didn't know anyone with COVID-19 and didn't think it really existed. Since June, the local health department has linked 21 cases to the hotel where Gomez and an entire crew of migrant workers are living.
And it's now day two of Indiana's statewide mask mandate. On day one, protesters gathered at the state house. They called the mandate unconstitutional.
The garden outside Eskenazi Hospital was packed with over 500 medical professionals last night. The demonstration created a sea of white coats and face masks.
You add the distrust, and it creates for very difficult family conversations. That's been the most challenging thing that I think we've had to overcome during this whole crisis. And I think that could be a fork in the road, and I'm hoping that we make it a positive one in terms of focusing on that trust for the system.
And I am the principal here at Chapelwood Elementary, and I'm going into my second year. The key word here has been pivot. So every time I get a new bit of information, I say, okay, back to the drawing board. What are we going to do?
As COVID-19 cases continue to surge, IMS is now scrapping plans to let any fans into the track to watch the Indy 500.
This morning, the COVID crisis, after shattering its single-day record of new infections, is now in its third wave nationally, and it's ravaging many smaller communities for the first time.
What we keep hearing is that people don't think COVID is a thing, that people are gathering in large groups without masks, they're not social distancing, and essentially that they have pandemic fatigue. You can look at our numbers and see. It's clear. COVID is the thing.
I think hero was the term that nationally we used at the time. But even in comic books, people listen to heroes, right? So I don't know that hero is the appropriate term if now we're begging people to do the right thing.
Okay.
And before you leave, we'll have you schedule an appointment for your second dose.
Okay, sounds good.
I got the email to schedule my vaccination, and I got on immediately. To me, it's the only sort of hope we've had this whole time, and it's sort of the best hope possible.
When you create a system or you announce a system and then you change those plans, it creates confusion among the customers and those who are really seeking the vaccine. And they just don't know where to go.
The nation tonight has marked a new watershed moment in the COVID-19 pandemic. 500,000 confirmed deaths. It comes even as daily increases in infections and deaths have slowed sharply in recent weeks.
That look back at the past 12 months was curated and produced by Carter Barrett, with music from Glass Obelisk and Blue Dot Sessions, and it launches our series, Reflections. This month, we'll look backwards and forwards as people contribute their stories of grief, challenge, growth, and making it work. And tomorrow, we'll have a conversation that is hosted by reporter Christine Herman. Now, by the way, to share your own story for this project, if you like, call 765-228-2129 to leave a voicemail. This is Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio. South Shore Clean Cities is taking a big step forward in serving more Hoosiers on a sustainable transportation model. Let's find out more about the expansion of South Shore Clean Cities from Executive Director Carl Isaac. Carl's with us today on Regionally Speaking, and thanks for joining us.
Chris, thanks for having us.
Well, tell us first about the thoughts behind the U.S. Department of Energy wanting to help South Shore Clean Cities expand to more than just Northwest Indiana.
Well, in 2020, the U.S. Department of Energy, which operates the National Clean Cities Initiative, selected Indiana, so the entire state, to participate in a statewide clean cities pilot program. So it's focused on expanding some of the outreach activities and technical assistance that we provide and to coordinate those things with stakeholders and participants on a statewide basis. So it's just an opportunity for us to really to discuss some of the great things that we've posted and worked on here in Northwest Indiana.
What did it seem that the U.S. Energy Department liked about South Shore Clean Cities' presence in Northwest Indiana so far, and how it thought it was worthy of going statewide?
Well, I think you know, one of the good things is you know, our partnerships that we've established here in Northwest Indiana, and so like having partnerships with our friends from the Northwestern Indiana Regional Planning Commission, which has allowed us to actually implement a green fleet program. Where we help folks on fuel neutral activity, helping them to kind of decarbonize their fleets, look at green activities that they can implement into their communities, into their businesses, that you know, going to help with air emission reductions, and it's also going to help them save money. So that model has been a template that we've had a tremendous amount of success with. And what the Department of Energy saw was they liked that provided across the entire state of Indiana.
When you're speaking of money here in particular, I know the South Shore Clean Cities has been able to work hard and being sure that they've been able to acquire an awful lot of money in grant funding that have helped out as well, too, right?
Sure. And in 2020 alone, Chris, we assisted our stakeholders with successful acquisition of more than $9.3 million in grant funds. And more than 175 vehicles and pieces of equipment. So that included like fueling and electric charging station infrastructure. $7.4 million of that was for public, private, and nonprofit entities right here in Lake Porter and LaPorte counties in Northwest Indiana. So we're really proud of that. And then most recently, $5.3 million was for the Indiana VW Grant Awards. And then we also worked on a national U.S. EPA award grant here in Northwest Indiana. So, you know, it's been a great ride, but we do anticipate a lot more opportunities, not just for Northwest Indiana, but for the entire state.
All right. Now, fill us in, if you will, on some of the logistics that the South Shore Clean Cities is going to be taking as you have this opportunity to expand from just Northwest Indiana into the statewide effort. First off, is there going to be any name change? And secondly, is there going to be any physical move that you all are going to make, or will you be able to expand outside the region to maybe some other locations?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. And I think one of the things that we've seen is that, you know, we've had a tremendous working relationship with partners like number two, Research Technology Center. So we've always maintained an office with the Merrillville complex here in Northwest Indiana. And so our growth pattern here will be to work with them and then have offices distributed throughout the five different areas of the state that the Purdue Technology Center exists. So, you know, it's a very technology-driven business incubator, if you will. And so we've just had great working relationships with with them, and, you know, we'll continue that as we expand throughout the state. So they're located in, you know, major metropolitan areas, you know, similar to ours. And it will just give us a great networking and give us the physical attributes where we'll be able to use their facilities to continue on and expand our educational facilities and expand with employee bases to be working out of those offices.
Now, for our listeners that may or may not be familiar with the Purdue Research Park setup here, we obviously know there's one here locally. That's where you all are located now. We, of course, know there's the big Purdue University Research Park just north of the West Lafayette campus. Where are some of the other locations that that will allow other cities, like in central or southern Indiana, to be able to take advantage of this?
Sure. You know, we're one of the Purdue Tech Centers that you just alluded to was very close to the Indianapolis airport. And so that's where we will have a location down close to Evansville, Indiana, and then in northeastern Indiana. And then also there's another facility that we're investigating, I believe, on the eastern central Indiana portion of our state. So it's, our growth pattern really will be looking at the poor air quality sections of Indiana. So Indianapolis is our first focus area. Then the next focus area would be the Evansville, Indiana area. So those are our two focus areas really for the 2021 endeavor.
Well, you know, for sure, there's always room for expansion, and that's what you have this opportunity to be able to do now, to be sure. If there's any more information that people would like to have, especially our listeners or people that have family members outside the region that are not familiar with South Shore Clean Cities, where are they going to be able to find out more, certainly about the upcoming statewide expansion, but just things in general about the programs with clean energy that and clean transportation that South Shore Clean Cities is providing?
Sure, Chris. I think the best way is just to go to our current website, which is SouthShoreCleanCities.org. As a 501c3 not-for-profit here, as we know, we're a fuel-neutral organization that promotes all of our fuels. So, people think that they have to go out and buy electric vehicles to be considered green. And, again, being a fuel-neutral organization, we're working with all of our major organizations here in Northwest Indiana and throughout the state now that are looking at decarbonization and ways that they can implement cleaner technologies and things like that. So that is one of the things. And you'd ask me in regards to a name change. We are currently in debate what our new name will be, and working with our attorneys and our nonprofit on that. So we're hoping to have a new name here within the month. So we're excited about that. But, to be very inclusive of all the transportation and mobility issues that, currently are happening. I mean, 2 years ago, who would have thought, about COVID and how would it affect our mobility throughout the state of Indiana? So, I mean, things have changed dramatically with transportation, not just in Indiana, but throughout the United States. So it's, it really is. It's an exciting time as we get through the pandemic and things hopefully get back to normal, and I think that would be some of the things that we will hopefully be able to assist as a technical resource for consumers and businesses and universities that are looking at the opportunities. I'm not saying that we know everything, Chris, but we know the right folks that know everything, and pretty much what we're working on are deployment strategies for our state and for businesses and schools in Indiana. So I'm proud of a lot of the deployment things that have happened here in Northwest Indiana, and just looking at some of the newer mobility activities and the implementation of some of the electric technology that I think we're all hearing about on a daily basis. So it's really an exciting time to be in the transportation field, but also on the sustainability aspects is that Northwest Indiana has not gotten a lot of kudos for all the great work that NERPC and NERPC's partners have done, and we're really proud of the work and all the planning. We do really have a very forward-thinking governmental area here in Northwest Indiana. So we're just excited that some of these projects that have been awarded to come to fruition and, learn from those projects and how we can deploy some of these activities throughout the state.
Well, Carl, thank you for joining us today to tell us about the expansion of South Shore Clean Cities to a statewide model. Carl Lissick is the executive director of South Shore Clean Cities. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be back with you tomorrow.